Welcome to the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast, taking you around the country, shedding light on the work of the Scottish FA from grassroots to coach development, and taking a look at the future of our game. In this episode, Craig Joyce sits down with Head of Coach Education Greg Patterson and Head of Girls and Women's Football Donald Gillies.
Donald, Greg, thanks for joining us on the podcast this morning. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Very good, thanks, yes.
Good. Donald, let's start where your coaching experience started, mate. I can remember meeting you way back when. I was telling Greg a story a minute ago. I was a Rangers and work experience, and you came into the office with your nice Adidas Rangers branded jogging suit for about 1993.
My jogging suit. And I actually had to buy those jogging suits because I'll no name names, but we were only given a t-shirt and we were given a t-shirt and a jumper with the brand on it, and then the worst pair of bottoms you've ever seen. Honestly, you could have fit about three people in them. So you get into like all available retail sports outlets and things and bought my own pair. It's feeling much better after that, to be fair.
Good. Anyway, so where did it start for you, mate?
All I knew was that I didn't want to sit behind a desk for my living. The irony of ironies. But I think I was talking to the 20 under 20 group, the kind of project that we've got, and we were talking about journeys and things like that. And I'd said that I didn't really know what I wanted to do at uni or later in life or whatnot, but I spent, must have been about 33 hours out of 35 at school in the PE department, whether it was volleyball, whether it was badminton, whether it was basketball or whatever, lunchtime, before school, after school. That was all I really knew. And I wasn't particularly good at school or exams or anything like that, so my grades were straight A's or anything the rest of it. Anyway, I'd been badgering a tutor at Strathclyde University up at the Jordan Hill campus to try and get in, and I never got the grades to get in to the course. And I went away on summer holidays, and I got a phone call when I was away from my dad to say that the tutor had been in touch. There was a space through clearing, did I want the space? And I was like, right, okay, I'll take it. And was it 2 years below you, Greg? So, yeah. Something like that. And that was the making of me, if I'm going to be honest. And from a coaching perspective, that was when I did my first coaching certificate. It was Early Touches at the time, and it was Craig Mulholland and Andy Gilchrist had done it up at Jordan Hill, which is surreal. So
that's interesting. I knew we were in obviously the same university together, the same course. We did the same course at Jordan Hill, but I never realised that was the way you get in, because I was exactly the same.
Yeah.
I was exactly the same. I never really managed to break that kind of infiltrate the course, if you know what I mean, without the grades and without pestering people. And then I remember, I think, being at a European qualifier at Ibrox and walking back with my pals and the same thing, phone call to say, or a message when I get in to say, you know, it was my mother saying.
Is it Christine Percival? It was Christine Percival that was looking after the course.
I think it was Dave Beck was my course director.
Dave was there as well. They were all good for I can remember on my first day at uni, like Christine pulling me one to the side and say, don't let us down. Oh my goodness.
But it was a good course. It's been the making of a lot of good people, actually.
It certainly has.
What was the course he's done?
It was Sport in the Community. Sadly, it doesn't exist anymore. They've kind of rejigged it, and it's moved obviously away from the Jordan Hill campus into the city centre campus in Glasgow. But Cammy Watts, another one that came through that.
Neely Mack.
I'm seeing there's plenty of people come through it now. I can't remember Ian Donnelly that would do a lot of work with. He came through Jordan Hill.
Stephen McLean was in the sports science fair and the sport and community course as well.
So there's plenty of people.
It's a good five team.
With or without me, I'm not sure.
Decent five team.
What was your first experiences when you went onto the courses? Because it was a wee bit different to what it is now back then, wasn't it?
The Early Touches, no. Like the certificate courses, no. And I really appreciate the way that it has evolved over time, but the core message has been reasonably simple to help coaches go and establish themselves as confident in what they're doing. It was session structure and it was content. And those were the two things at that point that really most people needed. So for me, there was no thought of warm up, unopposed practice, opposed practice, game related practice, small sided game, and then cut the leave. That didn't exist. So that remains special in children's coaching. It's not about, you know, that person barking orders. It's about maximising the time that you can. And whether you're at Williamwood, where I started, or Mearns Castle, and you used to chase around with your dad, that's the experience that kind of allowed me and any other coach, I think, the ability to go and try something new or fit it into some type of structure. So certainly certificate courses, a licence course, I thought the B licence at the time when I was on it was the best course I'd ever been on, because it was practical and that's what I needed. Now that's not the same for everybody, but that's what I needed, because I didn't come from a particularly high standard of football playing. I was never a pro or even a decent amateur, to be fair, if I could run around a bit. But that more detail, I can remember Craig telling me once, you know, once you go on these courses, you never look at football at the same. Mm-hmm. And it's 100% true. And I feel almost bad when you're saying to other people that in the 2020 or in any other courses, you'll never look at football the same, because you almost spoil the game for them.
Yeah, true.
But once you're in that bubble, you learn to kind of appreciate it in a different way.
How did you find the transition from being a candidate to a tutor? Because you've obviously tutored in quite a few of them as well.
I love it. I really do love it. I think that's what we really get to do in a really positive way in football development, and it's work with people. Some people are easier to work with than others, but at the end of the day, they're coming to you asking for your support to make them better. And I think myself and Greg and everybody that's in that position that have been tutors really take that responsibility really quite seriously. They don't always like what you have to say, and I guess that's down to each individual. But I did enjoy being in that position where you were able to share your experience and share your knowledge, but also encourage and support those that were in the same position that you were in. As I say, I was in their position. I know what it was like, and I know how nervous you feel delivering with peers. I know how nervous you feel when you're going to do something good, and I know how terrible you feel when it's a load of garbage, do you know? Mm-hmm. We did a CPD session with Hope Powell last week, who was really, really good. Hope was saying the same thing. She says, do you know, I've torn up things that I was doing on the pitch last week at Brighton, and like in my first session at England back in the 80s, and I'll continue to do it. And it's no good feeling when you think that you get it wrong, but as long as the people that are around you are there, they kind of make you better and support you, and I think that's been one of my favourite things.
How's it been working with the young ones on the 2020? Because I know a couple of young ones that are on it, so how's it been with them?
It's been really good, from the sense that it reminds you of what's needed to get done, because I think people don't necessarily recognise that the girls and women's game is still very, very fresh. It's not, although it's going through a really strong development period just now, there isn't this swathe of people that are going on CPD courses or going on coach education courses from the women's game, and that's what we're trying to change and to make more available. And the 2020 programme, or the 20 under 20 as it is, really had a mix of people that were full of beans and contributing to those ones that sat in the corner and looked as if they were going to walk out at any particular moment. Really enthusiastic. They did an introduction to match analysis with me at the Scotland Netherlands game. Some really good questions beforehand, talking about the different areas of the pitch, things that you should look for. It's funny, we talked about the Scotland Norway game beforehand, and they were of the opinion that it was a poor performance for Scotland and below par, and really I can't believe that all they did was play a 4-2-3-1 and that was it. And you know, there's elements of that is correct from a certain perspective, but the other side of it is that, you know, what are Norway, tell us the qualities of Norway, and they're saying, right, okay, well, they were fast, and they were quick, and they were strong, and that, right, okay, and you know, what was their formation? He said, well, they played a 3-5-2 with two straight up against their centre backs and then one behind their two strikers. And I'm like, right, okay, so you're playing against a team that is quicker, stronger, and playing two up with one behind, and are you suggesting then that Scotland are going to try and build from the back? That's what you want to do. You're in that position, and you can see those cogs going. Mm-hmm. And you know, we want to get to a point where our players are capable of doing that and want to do that, but we're still not quite there from a physical perspective either. But it did cast a little bit of doubt about, you know, oh, I never really considered those points. And see, going back to what you're telling about, asking me about going from candidate to tutor, like that's the parts that are really quite interesting.
No, it was interesting you saying that, because obviously you were talking about your experiences and going on it, and some of these young girls will just be starting out in that journey, and some of them will have no so good people to listen to, i.e. one of my players sits and nips my head every day about it. So, yeah. And that's great, because I've been in that position.
But you can see almost the ones already, not that you need to be that type of person, but you can see the ones already that have got that wee, yeah, I think I quite like this type of thing. There was a girl, Shannon, on it, that came over from the Western Isles. We had someone down from Aberdeen, Anna, Abby down from Fife, I think. Do you know, they've come from far and wide.
Yeah.
And not that you need to sacrifice a lot all the time to give yourself your first chance, but in the same vein, you do need to give a bit in order to get a little, so...
Yeah.
I think it's a fantastic programme, and I always remember Ali McCoy's talking at a conference once, or it was a Q&A session. I always remember him saying that he regrets not having started his education, his coach education, if you like, earlier. He only started when he finished his playing career, or in his last season or two, he maybe did his B licence. So to then get these people, you know, at the age of 18, 19, 20, is just fantastic. So, you know, they've, as Donald said, they'll hopefully build up that head of steam. And obviously aid and support the women's game in the years to come.
I think the thing as well is that, you know, we're running a female-only C licence, women's game B licence, looking at the women's game A licence as well. And these courses are all developing in order to try and fit in with the structure of how the women's game works, because the way that the courses are just now, they don't necessarily always provide the best availability for those that are working within the women's game. So Greg and I and the rest of the kind of colleagues in football development are looking at how to kind of fix that. But you're not just going to click a finger and get candidates to come onto that. Of course, there's got to be the catalyst somewhere along the lines. Shelley's great from that perspective, and the fact that you're providing someone at a high kind of visibility level for other female coaches that want to come in, but Shelley inspires other male coaches as well. You know, whether it's Gary Doctor, Hamilton Ackies, whether it's Craig Beveridge, Stirling, you know, Martin Nisbet, formerly for Farmington, other people. You know, we all want to kind of go on that path that she's been on, but I think we do need to recognise that in order to get there, the journey's got to start somewhere for female coaches.
Yeah,
and that's really a bit. 20 under 20 is all about starting that, giving two or three of them the bug that pathway there. Yeah, I quite fancy that pathway there, because I think that's what probably I thought when Andy and Craig first threw that up and said this is a pathway, and it was a children's licence that I wanted because I really enjoyed working with kids, and you have a purpose, almost like you're working towards it, and before you know it you were down at Largs doing your courses. I've still close friends with the coaches that were on that. A few in the office as well.
Did you like me to meet you on
no,
that as well?
No, it was Bisland I was thinking.
Oh, is it?
I was rooming with him and telling tales out of school. He says to me, Donald, I need to warn you. And I didn't know Danny before this, but I need to warn you, I sleep with my eyes.
I knew you were going to say that.
You were
Oh, dear.
Sleep with his eyes. I think
we've
just outed
them,
by the way.
I know, sorry, Danny.
When you're talking about them, was that when you done your courses then, was that when you used to get the big VHSs?
Yeah.
The big book and Pat Nevin doing the Cruyff turn about a million times.
That's right. Oh man, I loved them.
I used to watch him religiously.
Rewind and fast forward and everything.
Just the stripy tracksuit from Andy Roxburgh. Do you know the
big Umbro?
by a big Umbro things, and it was like that. It was
it's like the kit we had at Jordan Hill, actually.
Yeah,
talking about that. I know.
Umbro Jordan Hill was it? Mm-hmm. Umbro was the gear back then.
No,
wasn't it decent that then?
Big Umbro badge.
Matt horrible. Took up your whole.
Horrible.
Depending on what size you were, took up your whole area.
Let's talk about your coaching side. Did you ever want to coach like at a high level or like manage at a high level? I know you were saying there about wanting the children's pathway, but did you ever feel you wanted to do that?
I think that when I first got into coaching, I had aspirations to work at youth national level, and I was afforded that opportunity a few times. The timing for the kind of permanent type of role as a youth national team coach was offered during a previous manager's, but it didn't comply with my role that I was doing in here at the time. And that's always the thing about the jobs that I've been in. Like, it took me years and years to do my B licence, because when I went to the actual assessment, I'd started a new job, so I never went back and done the assessment, and then I went back a wee bit, and it's the same with the A licence too. But I don't know if I really deep down wanted to coach at a senior level. I probably definitely feel that I get the most enjoyment and personal self-satisfaction from helping others, if you know what I mean. I like the development area of the game. I like working with people that are far more intelligent than me and solve problems on the pitch that I could never solve. And I like to think that between those two areas, if I can support a person to do that role and they can do that role better than me, then I'm absolutely comfortable. But that's never to say never. Like, I really do enjoy coaching, and I miss being as close to close to the pitch as I have been in recent years. So maybe when I was younger, yeah.
I always find myself harking back to previous episodes, and if you remember Chris van der Hagen, he spoke a lot about that, didn't he? And it was the development part that's in his DNA. It's not necessarily the taking teams and things either. It's whether it's developing players, whether it's developing coaches or people even. You know, it's those different development strands, I suppose, that you're drawing on rather than that need to go and coach a team and do that. And people have got different... Football's great that way, isn't it? Because it just gives people so many different opportunities.
I was doing an interview with Charles Patterson from Sky in Nice, and Charles owned up, a lovely man, and he says, Donald, you've been involved in the development of these national team players. You know them better than most. Erin Cuthbert, one of your proteges, type of thing. And you've been in Sky Sports. I worked with Erin in the regional squads, but under no way would I ever take any single bit of credit for Erin being who Erin is. I think all we do at that point is facilitate the opportunity for the player to get better. And if you can throw in a nugget here or there and provide that structure, then I think that's what developing talent should be. It should be about the coach providing that environment for the player. I think the player, in order to reach that other level, has always got to have that between her ears and then in her soul, and that's who Erin was. That's why Erin is as good as what Erin is. I nearly burst into flames. I felt my cheeks going red in 40 degree heat in Nice, I tell you that. So
I was about to touch on that there. You must take a wee bit of satisfaction though, knowing that you've had a small part to play in helping her and guiding her on her pathway, or facilitating, as you said.
Definitely. I think that the regional squads within the South West region always had quite a few talented young players when I worked with them. Lee was the goalkeeper at the time as well. She's doing well in the kind of A squad. Other kind of players that represented youth national teams at 19s and 17s. Kirsty Howe was one of them as well. Kirsty's done and is doing incredibly well too, and I think another kind of bright future is going. So yeah, you do take that little bit of satisfaction, but I think that any coach within those regional squads recognises that, you know, you're getting the player that is already done the hard part, if you know what I mean, in terms of learning to play the game, understanding how the game works, and then done that so well that they show a little bit of talent and ability. You get them when they're able to turn up and do your practices and things like that. So I definitely think, as much as it's good to reflect and say, oh, I had player X or player Y, it probably provides more to you as a coach, mm-hmm. knowing that you have the opportunity to work with them, than you influencing who they are or what they've done. But I have been pretty privileged to see Aaron do some ridiculous things, just things he couldn't envisage any player doing. So, and she's doing them regularly now.
Absolutely. We're talking about the growth of the women's game. How did it feel for you when you seen the national team playing it out there?
That was probably the single most. Most, I don't know what the word is, and I always struggle to find words when people talk, but I've said it before, it has been the best thing that I've ever done or ever been part of at the association. I can remember sitting in Jordan Hill again with a few of my friends, Stuart Sharp and Stuart Aitchison and Dave McLeish and a few others. We were involved with a girls team, or setting up a girls team called Arsenal North, and we talked about how it would be great to have teams at every level, and we managed to do that along with the help of some incredible volunteers, and then we talked about it would be great to be able to play in the Premier League, and then Stuart took that team to the Premier League, and then we talked about how it would be great to have a youth international, and then we had Jenny Beattie, and then we talked about, you know, where else it would go, and we took a step back, and fortunately it got taken on by Celtic. And see, when you're sitting in the library at Jordan Hill and you're thinking, you know, we should maybe start a team, and you're seeing where the women's game is, and we played out of the Donald Dewar in Drumchapel, and it was before, or it was just about to get renovated as well, and you're turning up and you're dodging missiles for the high flats, literally dodging missiles from the high flats, because there's a path that kind of goes round the corner of the Donald Dewar, and it could be rocks, or it could be potato guns, or it could be like baby guns, or, you know, those bug type of things. We had one of them, somebody when we came onto a pitch to play Donald Dewar, that there was goals, one side of the goal was a rock and the other one was a prosthetic leg, and it was like who's running around from chapel with the leg was more my thought, who saw that and then put it in the ground. But when you think about where the women's game has come from then, as to what was done against Jamaica out there in 18,000, and the people in here, you know, for me, hands down, above getting to the World Cup, that was at 18,500, like unbelievable, and the way that the game went too was just perfect. Not perfect, that obviously
exciting,
but it was exciting, spectacle, and there was good weather, and it's
been the same with the squad every time. Do you know, see when the team in here put their backing behind it, you know, you can't really control what happens in the game, but it was the same like with the US game. They did incredibly well with the US game, and even before that, the Switzerland game, where the marketing was all 2-0, but it was all two games to go. It wasn't predicting the score, but we knew we needed to beat Switzerland 2-0 to have it in our hands going to Albania. And, you know, it was 2-0 after 7 or 8 minutes, and you're like, oh my goodness, and the crowd were there, and they were up, and they never quite finished like that. But every time that we put something behind the game, the squad cannot rise to the occasion. And no, Jamaica for me was the one. It was the moment. It was amazing. And I think that's always going to be in the record books. You know, see when you're on Twitter and you're looking at what's happening in Atletico Madrid, you know, 54,000 or 39,000 in Turin or whatever it's going to be, and you think, oh, you know, I wish we could do that. Granted, it's no a full house at Hampden Park, but that will come. That will come at some point. And I think to get 18,500 at this point really, really is a marker of what can be done. And I think a few people were very, very sceptical about whether or not that could have been done. And I think it was just such a watershed moment for the association, for the women's game, for Scotland as a country throughout the world, that, yeah, we're on that pathway too. And I think
you talk about that scepticism. I was handing out tickets left, right, and centre down in Troon, and talking to people after it as well. And that scepticism, people just took. Well, I'll take tickets to take my kid along to their first game at Hampden. That's what it was. But then the parents are coming back to me saying, "I never realised the girls were so good. I never realised the game would be so good. I never realised they could do this, they could do that." So there is that scepticism that's probably getting overcome as well, and will hopefully drive, as you say, future attendances.
Massively so. You know, we were disappointed, obviously, in the way that the World Cup went. But in the same vein, see, when you reflect upon the England game, you know, they finished fourth, and we outplayed them in the second half. Mm-hmm. Granted, we didn't do as well in the first half. Japan, same story. Japan should have beaten the Netherlands. They were fantastic.
Is that right?
Yeah, and the Netherlands got a late penalty, unfortunately. But in my opinion, Japan were better than the Netherlands. And then, of course, you get the Argentina game. That is what it is. But it's not as if we turned up at the World Cup and didn't reach the standards, I think, that the players in Chile had before. But we didn't go there and not contribute and not do the same things that we've been doing at the Jamaica game or the Switzerland game and all of that. Different problems with different solutions and things. And I think, to Greg's point about people reckoning, wow, I didn't realise, I think that's been a massive part of the World Cup too. And it fills me with kind of a great deal of regret that I'm not going to be here to see that first home game at Easter Road.
Easter Road, and see what kind of reaction there is, yeah.
Because that could be another marker in the women's game in Scotland.
Mm-hmm. There's a massive growth and rise in it, obviously, if you've personally been in it, and for the last 10 years, it's came on well. It's massively came on well, and when you're sitting out there and you see it, you think, why the hell, there's 18,500 sitting in Hampden watching the women's team playing. And I was at the Switzerland game, there was a real buzz about it, but there was a real buzz at Hampden that night as well, and it was great.
Do you know, the players have been emailing me on and off, like saying all the best and all the rest of that, and it's really, really well appreciated. But again, like, they fill their role as role models so well, especially the kind of domestic based ones that really carry a lot of the burden, because the players that are playing internationally aren't always in that kind of in that bubble in Scotland. And really, the way that they go about their business contributes to it. The way that the commercial team go about their business, communications, ticketing, registrations, you know, football development, it was just such a collective effort. And I think that moment will continue to push the women's game as well. So it wasn't just a moment of coming a game, it was a let's continue this momentum. And when you do reflect back on it, you take nothing but wow, what about that, what about the potential of it? And if that's the potential here at the top end, then fingers crossed it can drag everything else along with it. So it's more of a momentum builder as well as just a line in the sand and a great single moment. I'm absolutely confident that will be a moment in 5 and 10 and 20 years where people will look back and say, mind the time, because they used to say mind the time at the playoff game
Spain out there
as well, when there was 4,000.
Yeah,
and we beat that at the Switzerland game. And then I definitely think we beat that at the USA, and we get somewhere in some liberal counting. I was raging, honestly. No way! There's got to be about 17,000 inside this 8,000 seater capacity stadium.
Pictures of the stadium counting every hand as you go.
Honestly.
The empty seats.
I know. But yeah, so I think that's a moment that they'll talk about for,
I think so,
for many, many years to come.
You're talking about the moments to talk about. Also, gives the girls in the country something to look forward to as well. And with the soccer centres that you're talking about, the domestic players and the players down south and stuff that are associated to, they just seem to be growing, and you see them everywhere on Twitter. There's a Jane Ross one, there's Lee Alexander, Joe Love, Joel Murray.
They've been brilliant.
They're everywhere.
They've been brilliant. They've been brilliant because everybody has bought into them. When we were talking about, we're first developing our girls, our game in the kind of Marcoms department, and talking about what it should be and the market research, and everybody having specific areas of that strategy where it was talking to parents about the opportunities that are available. So those were the people that were going to bring young girls to the football, so we felt we had to speak to them. What type of messages should it be? But also talking to young girls that might see something at primary school and say, right, it's got to be vibrant, it's got to be fresh, it's got to be happy, it's got to be all the messages that you would want an opportunity of any kind for a young person to be. We needed these things to have. But on top of that, with qualifying for the Euros, we needed to find something that would build the profile of the A-squad players as well. So putting them kind of front and centre with the soccer centres was the concept. Your Joel Murray soccer centre, your Kim Little soccer centre, your Jane Ross soccer centre. Make the the colours vibrant. Make it an opportunity that sits below that of club level, that is an entry point for 5 to 12 year old girls, because we recognise that those entry points are a little bit later than they are for the boys' game. Whether it's through current perceptions, whether it's through lack of opportunities or whatever else it is. So that works to our advantage, because we've got that captive audience at primary school level at 5 to 12s, so we can go in and we can speak to schools and we can talk about those opportunities. And then once the clubs and trusts and local authorities then saw that there was a universal marketing campaign of Our Girls, Our Game that they could have, that they could be part of, that they could put their badge next to, as long as they made sure that the session was delivered in a positive environment, that all the safety checks were done and that it was run appropriately, they could use that to their benefit as a pathway into their club. It's just been something that is gathered and gathered and gathered, and the response has been brilliant. You know, the A-squad did an open training session for the Jamaica game, and we had some selected soccer centres that were playing on the AstroTurf next to the Hampden pitch at Orium. And once the players had finished their open training session, they migrated through. They were only meant to be there for 5 minutes. Oh my goodness, they were there for about 45. And Shelley was like, no, stay as long as you want. And Andy and Banksy, they were all the same state. And Nick Dock was in, passing the ball. Kirsty Smith was in, passing the ball. Chloe Arthur and Sophie, they were all really enjoying themselves because of the girls. And it was almost that connection between the people that was on the front cover of these soccer centres.
Yeah.
Seeing the people that have brought them to their soccer, because the girls were running around with your Lee Alexander, Jane Ross and things, and names in the back. And I really do hope that type of thing resonated with them, because that's the type of thing that they are creating for future generations of girls to play, using their profile. And it's a lot to lend your name to something like that. So they've been fantastic, and sponsors been great as well. So no, definitely one of the best things that's happened in my time here.
That's two we've got out of these best things we've done right here.
One off.
Two of now. So the reason I asked about that is obviously I've got a wee girl on, so both you. Mm-hmm. So it's great to have positive role models for them to look up to. And it's you're no longer just hearing wee kids talking at football about Messi and Ronaldo. And there's nothing up with Messi and Ronaldo, but now they're talking about Aaron Cuthbert and Kim Little and Jenny Beattie and stuff like that. And I think that's great.
Yeah.
My daughter goes to the Joe Love Soccer Centre in Hamilton Accies. She's been going for about 18 months. And no nepotism at all, but that particular centre, because I don't pick the centres that go and do anything, but that particular centre was chosen as one of the South Lanarkshire venues.
It's a hot ball. It's a hot ball that came out of the
door. that.
They didn't turn that.
To go and play at half time in the Jamaica game. And see, from a personal perspective, see sitting up there in the stand and seeing your daughter playing in Hampden, just the best thing ever. And then the Thursday comes and she gets her Scotland top on, her Scotland shorts on, and her LOL socks. You've got to have her LOL socks. She's got her pink Adidas, because she's a girly girl to a certain extent. She's got her pink Adidas preds, and she goes out there and she takes bodies, which embarrasses me greatly when it does happen. But she's so enthusiastic, and she bounces back up when she gets it done, and she does all the things that you want a person involved in any type of positive sport and activity, whether it's tigging the playground or climbing trees outside or an organised session like that, to do. And I need to admit, there's a wee bit of oh, that's brilliant, that's decent, you know, I've pleased that the 3 hours that I spent downloading a report to count how many soccer centres there are, to report that to the SSE, for them to come back and say, great, we're going to extend to keep them going, to Shirley Martin going and putting one on, and it's just a little moment that you kind of take for yourself, and I think everybody needs within their job to take a step back and say, I'm pleased that's something positive that's happened.
Yeah, there's always that moment or that reason that somebody somewhere's kicking a ball because of what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, see when you're working with the coaches of the Premier League teams that are trying to balance, or some of them that are balancing full-time jobs and that as well, because everybody's been in it. You've been there.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure you've been there as well, Elsa, behind the scenes and whatnot, to pretend you're not listening. Everybody's done it, and I think that there still needs to be an opportunity to do that, and somebody's responsible for putting that in place.
Yeah.
And I was just really thankful that after X amount of years, you're able to get into work, and that's what your job is, full-time football. It's not the only job, pushing trolleys and safety was another job, but that's the only job I've ever known, and privileged existence sometimes, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, 100%. Do you ever find yourself getting involved, while she's playing, or do you just kind of step back? Are you able to step back? Because I know you said you help take the kids as well, so.
I'm now 3 teams in a go.
Oh, brilliant. That gives me nightmares, 3 teams in a go.
Can't help myself, it's difficult.
I took my son's team at BSA for maybe 3 or 4 years, really because it's the same old, when you were doing a bit, you wanted the coach to maybe do this or maybe do that. But the people that were taking it were really, really good people, and you just wanted to lend them a hand to make the environment as good as possible. When my son turned around and said, I'm not really enjoying it, I was like, all right, okay. We gave it another wee while, and he says, nah, I'm not really enjoying it. And that was fine, and he took a step back from the club. But the problem, I think, with the boys' game at that age is that, see, if you don't fit into that wee bubble of a team and at that particular point, I don't see the opportunities for lesser players that are maybe less coordinated or maybe don't have that natural, instinctive, keep up your ability to, I've got 2 sons that are older, and my 12-year-old really loves football, but he's not in a club.
Mm-hmm.
And it really hurts me that there's not necessarily a place for him to go along and go and just play with other kids of the same type of ability as that. But I know that exists for Beth and the other girls and things like that. So as much as I drop her off and I stay at the soccer centre, I do tend to kind of take a sit back and kind of let it happen. But I don't know if the time that I get to...
3 teams later?
3 teams later that I'll be able to stay there. So time will tell.
Wait, did these teams at the O?
Oh, I was doing mixed stage play last night. It was great. Mixed stage play in 28 degrees sunshine last night was just the best thing ever. You know, 2012s, 2013s, 2014s all playing together. And in fact, there was a couple of big brothers just saying, can I join in as well? So we had 2 2010s in as well, who were the big brothers. And they just weren't allowed to score, but they were allowed to set all these wee kids up. It was just great, just to get them out, as Donald says.
Many aside, was it 22 aside?
No, there wasn't that many, if I'm being honest.
Jumpers for goalposts?
I would. Brilliant. 6 teams of 4 in the go, and that was it.
Tourney.
Brilliant.
That's what it's all about. You're a well-travelled man. You like to get about, not including the World Cup there. what was the attraction to America? I know you've been there for a few coaching things.
I think the potential in the US is massively exciting. I think their attitude to sports, by and large, is something that I really enjoy, I really like. And see, when you talk about Scotland, and it's same old story, Scotland, so close, but then not across the line type thing, that drives me round the bend. It drives me around the bend from the perspective of why are we like that? Because you can't deny that we are a country that gets to a point and then seems to press a self-destruct button or find some innovative way to do ourselves out of getting across that line or achieving something. And I think that in the US, it's almost that arrogance bordering, no, this is what we are going to do, and we will commit to that point in order to get there. And I think that although I can't put the finger on that differentiation between culture and environment, over arrogance, you know, that type of thing, I do appreciate that mentality of when I do something, it's going to be 110% and I'm going to commit to it and I'm going to do X, Y and Z. So I think the potential over there is huge within football. They've got obviously a world class and a world champion female team, have done for the last kind of 8 years, but again the potential for developing the girls and women's game over there is still massive. Mm-hmm. My remit will include the boys and at the club, and I think that there is a massive desire over in the US for their boys and men's teams to be successful as well. I think probably feeling a lot of that pressure to get that happen, you know, a country of 260-270 million people with that type of resource that they do. I think they see that the men's team should have won the World Cup just by now.
Yeah, yeah.
But when it's not necessarily been ingrained within their social conscious in the same way that it has in places like Brazil and Argentina and Germany and Italy and Spain, and that, you know, that takes time. So the potential is definitely attractive. I'm not so sure about the weather because I'll probably burst into flames off of the plane. But no, good people, really enthusiastic, and something I'm looking forward to.
How did it come about? How did they poach you? That's basically what I'm asking you here. Did they poach you?
I did. I got a phone call, and I was like, no, I'm quite happy where I am. Thanks very much. I appreciate it. And then I got another phone call saying, do you know, maybe just have a look at it. And I was like, oh, okay, didn't want to be rude. So we just talked and back and forward for a wee while, and then like, do you want to come over and have a wee look? And I said, oh no, I wouldn't do that if I'm not particularly quite there in terms of thinking that I'm going to do it. He says, oh, listen, no strings attached, just come on over and have a wee look. And I've been talking with the family about the potential of the opportunity, and my wife was, do you know, what's the harm in going to have a look? So we went to have a look, and the harm was that we loved it. The harm was that the people were so great. The plan for the club itself was really, really interesting. It's a different challenge for me. So back into a club, not quite the club that we were talking about at John Hill,
but a different club.
I think that just after those conversations and coming over and then back and then going back over with the kids, and the kids were enthusiastic about it as well. It was one of those ones that, as much as it's kind of bittersweet and that didn't want to leave the association or never had thoughts of it in the first place, maybe 4 or 5 years down the line, you're like that. Do you know, I wish you'd been brave, not just for yourself, but for your family as well, to go and have a pop, you know, and see what it's like and provide a new experience and open their eyes up to what other cultures and societies are like and things like that. And that really appeals to me from a family perspective too. So that was how it worked.
What kind of size of club is it? They talk about these clubs in America, they've got 10,000 playing members and things like that.
So the role itself is technical director of Colorado Rapids Youth Soccer Club. So the way that it works is you've got your MLS team, mm-hmm. you've then got the academy underneath it, which is the boys and girls from a certain perspective, and then underneath that you've got the youth club that it's attached to, and the membership in there is circa kind of 15,000 players at the club itself, and that's more girls that are playing in the whole of Scotland, you know, 14,000 last year between recreation and then teams and things like that. So it's 15,000 is the membership in there. And again, that was something that was like, but after a wee while, you're like, you know, what could you do with that? Mm-hmm. What could you really do with that? Mm-hmm. From across the whole spectrum and getting people to love the game the way that you love the game, you know, right up there, number one. Developing talent is on that list, you know, as well. Lifelong participation, all of the stuff that we talk about in here, it's almost a similar role, to be honest, if you take a step back. It's just getting done at a club environment as opposed to national environment in Scotland. So,
good stuff.
Pretty big.
I think when you look at it, you've kind of came full circle now. So there's another wee bit on the yeah. storyboard for you to tell
yeah.
when you're telling other people's stories.
Yeah, I know. And I think from a self-development perspective as well, I didn't need a change, didn't look for it, didn't want a change. But I think when an opportunity to change and there's a benefit for the opportunity and the challenge comes along, I think that everybody should look at that. I'm not saying don't give everything you've got to the job that you're in and then look to jump ship as soon as you can. Absolutely not. I won't. Ideally speaking, I would have loved to have this opportunity further down the line, but who's to say?
You don't know, it might not have been there.
Mm-hmm. But I definitely felt that a massive element was the challenge and the different environment. And although it is going full circle, you know, working with the staff, working with the senior club, working with the state association, understanding that different type of model for developing football, I think will be good for me. And you know, come back up the road, tail between my legs, fingers crossed, the experience will be decent for somebody else back here if they'll have me.
No, hope so. I've got one last question. Still game or chewing the fat?
Oh,
where'd you pull that question from?
Well,
see, I'm biased.
He's got affiliations to one.
Probably still game because I'm the one still game.
It's a good warm up though, wasn't it?
It was. It's a good warm up. It was. We set me and my unnamed colleagues looking for a bit of extra dough, like, pulled into the cast at a few opportunities. So definitely still game because they were the better for no having me and my pals in it in the background.
And you could just sit back and enjoy it. See, there being a television star.
I know.
Donald, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks very much. And all the best.
All the very best, Donald. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
That's all we have time for in this week's edition of the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast. Feel free to send us your feedback, your ideas for coaching topics you want us to cover, and to get in touch, visit @ScottishFA on Twitter or email info@scottishfa.co.uk.